Hello and welcome to this episode of Passionate About People. My name is Phil Dave. I'm a broadcaster who works in a number of subjects, including mental health and technology.
Hello, it's Graham here. I'm a business mentor and life coach, and I concentrate on one-to-one coaching, and I also have a radio show. I'm not going to go on about that again on this particular episode.
And we are joined today by James Roycroft Davis.
Hello, my name is James and I'm an entrepreneur, serial founder. I host quite a popular men's mental health podcast called The Rut, and I also enjoy podcasting in general.
Now, the idea behind this episode of this podcast is that we are going to look at mental health and well-being, something that I know that all three of us can talk about in an abundance. So let's crack straight on with it. And James, with reference to you, how did you first get into this subject? Because even in this day and age, okay, we are all much better at talking about mental health and trying to be a little more open and honest about it. But let's be honest, there's still a long way to go. So how did you get into it?
I've suffered with mental health issues probably most of my adult life, and I didn't really quite understand what that meant until I was raising money for two of my companies back in 2019, and the pressure I was putting on myself was enormous. I then found that as of September 2019, I was really beginning to get into quite a dark hole. And that is when anxiety, depression, but mental health in general became a real problem for me because it was a daily battle. Fast forward a couple of months and my funding round with one of the companies fell through all in one day and my mind gave up. And there, very deep depression set in. I was in bed for a couple of weeks and mental health really just went through the floor. It got really, really bad.
So hang on a second. So how does this manifest itself? So you say you're in bed. Why were you in bed? Were you tired? Was it a case of that you just didn't feel like doing anything?
Yeah, I was physically and mentally exhausted. I was in bed because I didn't want to face reality that I felt like I was a failure. And this is something which entrepreneurs, I think, often do feel when their baby, their startup, their business goes down the toilet often, is that failure is such a difficult thing to sit there and be comfortable with because it's unnatural. And therefore, I was faced with my first big failure from a company perspective. I'm a young entrepreneur, I'm only 26, but this was my first real deep failure. From a company perspective, obviously I've had many failures in my life, but from a company, it really hurt. And so dealing with this became this like eternal problem that I was facing in my mind every single day. And fast forward the start of 2020, so last year, I had absolutely no idea where I was. I was kind of in this murky wilderness of entrepreneurialism, which is something finishes and you absolutely recognize that you're the worst employee ever and you never ever want to work for somebody ever again but yourself. And so I was sat there in this wilderness of what do I do next? Where do I go? Am I good enough? And I always felt this cascade of emotions around like not feeling good enough as a person. And so that manifested itself the start of last year where it got a lot worse and I became suicidal. And that is where I began to recognize my mental health was something which I really needed to now take seriously and begin to explore. And so off the back of being suicidal and having two failed attempts at my life, I began to really dig into why men in particular are so rubbish at talking about their emotions. Why do we feel that we can't speak about our mental health? Because if we do, we aren't strong enough, we aren't manly enough. It's this entire debate and conversation around masculinity, which meant I delved into the world of men's mental health to a new depth with starting the podcast. And I started The Rut because I built it for myself, actually, because when I was really in a really dark hole, I vividly remember looking for podcasts which really explore the kind of deep psychology of men's mental health. I'm a solutions person, right? I wanted to know, why was this happening to me, or how am I going to get myself out of this, even if it was the most painful experience of my life, by my granddad dying. And that led me to try and listen to content out there, but it wasn't relatable. I was listening to a lot of like Jay Shetty's podcast, where Jay Shetty's a great guy, don't get me wrong, but it's all very blue sky thinking, like, let's sit and whilst I meditate, it's all like, okay, well, your mind is the sky, and then you just need to access the blue and the sun. That wasn't working for me, so I started the podcast trying to dive into men's mental health so I could really dig into other people's minds and work out why they got into their ruts and then how they got out of it.
I'm a bit blown away by all of that. So that's quite amazing. Look, you're 26. I'm going to be 55 this year. So I've had loads of failures, hundreds of failures. There's a couple of things I just want to, that I picked up on that you said. Men don't like talking about themselves, about their mental health. I've suffered from that for years. In fact, I had what I term as business anxiety. So as an entrepreneur like you, there are so many things that go on as an entrepreneur. I mean, I haven't had a guaranteed salary since October 1989. So you've got you have to constantly be, I think that's older than you. You've got to constantly be creative. And yes, there's a pressure in that. And there's also a pressure in revealing yourself. You don't want anyone to know what's going on inside, because that might affect your business or others' belief in you if you're trying to set up a business and grow a business. I think what interests me, James, is when you're in that place where you can't really see what's going to happen next, so that place of complete uncertainty which drives you on that downward spiral, this thing of wanting to talk, do you think that the fact that doing your podcast and actually talking about it openly to others has been part of your recovery?
It interestingly started off as mini therapy sessions for me, and then actually I realized I was really, really damn good at getting other people to talk, and that spiraled into this whole series of people coming on and talking and me being able to get other men to talk. In answer to your question on your point on uncertainty, one of the biggest things I've learned since I went through, and still do, I've been on antidepressants now for the last 6 months, and by the way, they've changed my life for the better. But one of the big things for me has been recognizing where does growth come from, because I think that my depression and my mental health problems was this insatiable desire to grow as a person, but not knowing how to do it. And then I actually looked back at this and I realized that growth, I think, comes from being comfortable with the uncomfortable. And therefore, when you can reframe it in that way and you look at a problem or you look at a scenario, an experience that immediately you know you're going to be uncomfortable with, if you can sit in that experience and accept that this is going to be potentially really scary or uncomfortable, then you grow as a person. And I think that is where this whole experience around failure comes from. Is failure is a really uncomfortable experience. It is something we're not really taught about. We don't learn about in school. We learn through it in the traditional sense of learning, but we learn through learned experiences. And that can go either one way or the other. A lot of people can take failure as a really awful thing and it really knocks them for six, like it did for me. But then actually other people can look at failure, and I think this is where entrepreneurialism is such an interesting area for failure and mental health, because I now look at failure in a completely different way because of my experiences. For me, failure, there's no such thing as failure. It is literally you either win or you learn. And once you begin to accept that failure is a good thing, then you can move on. And that is where my mental health has completely changed. It is exploring and diving into the whole experience of failure and not actually looking at my failures as this cyclical kind of foghorn in my mind of you're not good enough. Actually, that doesn't exist.
Now, when it comes to failure, this is something that I have been banging on about for years, and people have told me, I'm too harsh, what's the matter with you, how can you think like this? I have a major issue with the way that we seem to have, in this country at the very least, but possibly wider. But in this country, what we have done is we have taught successive generations for at least two generations that it is not okay to fail. And the reason we've done that is because if you look at something as simple as the humble sports day at school, where everyone's a winner now, if you have a participation award for taking part, what that actually tells someone in a very vulnerable and very young age and impressionable age is that you will win at everything in life. That is hugely detrimental, and that is incredibly irresponsible. I do not understand how, number one, that is not treated with the utmost seriousness that it deserves, because, as James, you've attested to already on this very show, you don't always win in life. It's as simple as that. It's not nice. No. Sometimes people do fail. And as if that isn't bad enough, it then goes on towards the next phase of life as well, where we've taught successive generations of teenagers that you can get a degree for anything you want in life and you can do whatever you want in life. No, you can't. I hate to say it. You can certainly give it a damn good go, but it's not always going to go your way. And that's okay. It doesn't matter if it doesn't always go your way, because what you do is you take whatever life throws at you and you make it work for you. And I don't understand how we've found ourselves in a situation where that is such a foreign concept. It's just ridiculous.
It's Phil's getting very emotional and excited. And I like it when he gets like that.
Apologies. Now, sorry, but it's, as you can tell, it's something I feel really strongly about and I don't understand it.
Look, we all do. You brought up some amazing points, James, because we did a podcast. One of the first ones we did was called Failing Your Way to Success. And when I say I've failed hundreds of times and I have a smile on my face, I have a smile on my face when I say it for exactly the reason that you've pointed out, is that I've learned, and I say this many times, that yes lives in the land of no and success lives in the land of failure. So if there's something you really want, you've got to, it's just about finding out what doesn't work for you. And as soon as you find out what does work for you and you've got your own little niche, then no longer can you be afraid of failure. But that feeling, I was talking to someone the other day who said to me, oh, do you remember, you know, a year ago when we used to go on meetings, I had this feeling, oh, what do I want to go to that meeting for? What's the point? Those feelings are great feelings. Because normally you'll find, and I think the listeners might think that, is when they think like that and they go to that meeting, something really good happens. So I think it's about making failure your friend, making fear your friend, and understanding that it's not actually what we've been taught.
One thing I've observed in the last, actually because of COVID, is entrepreneurs typically go against the grain. Right, they do things very, very differently. Their brains think differently. They are incredibly, except they love it. They love risk. They head into risk. Risk doesn't faze them. And I think we as a society have got into this routine, which is you leave school, you go to university, you get a job, probably in the city. It is corporate life. And it is almost like you find a partner, whether that is a man or a woman, you get married, you have kids, and then you take your pension and you might invest some of your money, but you have a nice pension, and then that is your life planned out for the vast majority of people. And I actually think that the reason why there's often so much unhappiness in society is because people aren't doing what they want to do in their life because they haven't yet got the balls to look at, actually, do I need to go against the grain here or do I need to do something different? And that breeds poor mental health because people don't do what they love. People don't do what they want to do. either because they don't think society will accept them or they can't accept themselves. And that is, I think, this like pandemic within society at the moment is, how do we conquer that? How do we spread this message that you've got to do what you want to do and take the risks in life without being judged, or you are always accept that you're going to be judged, but what can you control?
Every time I speak to you, James, I sort of get goosebumps because you're saying things that when you're saying them, I'm thinking, wow, this guy's 26 years old and he's so far advanced in his thinking. And that's not being patronizing to any other 26-year-old. I'm just saying that I started thinking like that when I was, and I remember it, when I was 42. And that's because I've been doing something for a while. I quite enjoyed it. But at 42 and in a recession, I decided, you know what? I'm just going to do what I love. Mm. And it's only at that point when I decided that I was going to do what I love and take that risk. As an entrepreneur like you've been all my life, really, that's when my life changed. And my mantra now, as Phil knows, this podcast is called Passionate About People. My business is called Passionate About Business. I've got another business called Passionate About Music. It's all about doing what you love. Mm. So there's two things I would say here, James, is that one, either do what you love because you can at work. If you can't, at least like what you do. But whatever you are doing, that needs to feed a passion.
I would go one further than that. You can do what you love. It's about finding the time to do it. I'll give you a good example. My brother, he probably won't listen to this, but if he does, I do apologize. My brother is incredibly highly intelligent, but has taken a very, very different route in his life to most people. He got expelled from school. He went to a great private school. He got expelled, basically being an idiot. And he has all these great ideas, but he is stuck in this corporate world. Now, I say to him exactly that, Graham, look, do what you love, do what you love. But actually, when it comes down to it, he doesn't quite make the time to go and do what he loves. Yes, you have 24 hours in a day, and hopefully you're sleeping for 7 or 8 hours of those 24 hours. But whether you work late and you come home, spend an hour figuring out what you want to do and actually take the time to do it. Life is about luck and hard work, in my opinion, but also about being passionate about something. And once you're passionate about something, all the rest goes out the window because it's not work anymore. Now, for me, I had the realization that, yes, I love podcasting and I love spreading the message of men's mental health and mental health in general. And I can talk about it because I'm relatively articulate, but I love building businesses and it is inherently comes with all these different risks attached to it. And that is always a problem. But once you find that passion, I know I'm passionate about building companies. I like having ideas and taking them on and building livelihoods and building passions that way. But you've got to find the time. It took me a while to find the time, and now I live and die by it.
There are so many factors, though, that dictate whether or not one has time to do something in this day and age. The fact that we live in an age of instant gratification is so, so detrimental. It's unbelievable. Whenever we arrange something, we expect it done now. So let's take the humble excuse of ordering something online. How many places now not only do next day delivery, they do same day delivery. We expect something bang like that, no matter how special it is, no matter where it comes from, nothing like that. It doesn't matter. Just all we know is we want it now. And if you look at the way that mobile phones have revolutionized us, okay, there is no doubt about it. Mobile phones are a wonder. They've absolutely changed the world for the better in many, many ways, but they've also been detrimental. And we don't look at this often enough. What happens with a mobile phone? There's no escape. One can never, ever switch off from work when you have your mobile phone with you, because now we have emails going to it. Now we can take phone calls at any time of day. We have social media on our phones. It is a computer in our hand that we can never, ever turn away from because of the addictive nature that a screen automatically has on the mind. I've never understood that, but we know it exists. Scientists have said so. The point is that if there's no escape, it means we can never switch off. If we never switch off, it means we're not going to have that surplus time where we think to ourselves, now what am I going to do with this free time now? Because in the days when we used to go to work 9 to 5, just for the record, I've never worked 9 to 5 in my life. I've done all sorts of jobs. They've never, ever been 9 to 5. But the point is that when you used to go into an office at 9 o'clock, leave at 5 o'clock, everything was left behind. And it's the same kind of premise actually with school life as well. When pupils are at school, they finish for the day, that's it. They don't have any contact with anybody, friend or foe, until the next day. And that's just the way that it used to be, which is why we used to have time for ourselves. And now, with instant gratification and with mobile technology, it's kind of all piling in against us.
I've studied myself and this entire world of mental health now, like religiously, every single day for the last year. And they talk about putting 10,000 hours in. I'm probably fairly close to that. But the interesting thing I've found from looking back at my discomfort, my dis-ease and depression, anxiety, my problems with my mental health, is that nobody ever makes time to slow down, to speed up anymore. And that is something that it's a conscious decision I had to take. And I sat down, it was probably about last October. The podcast was going very, very well, but there was something else that I just feel like there was a different itch I needed to scratch. It was, I wanted to start another company again, or I wanted to get back involved with startups and try and build something different other than the podcast. And I set myself in October, I said, look, you're going to spend the next 3 or 4 months, set yourself a 12-week target of exploring. And that means you wake up every single day. And I'm a curious person anyway, but you're intensely curious. 10x the amount of curiosity you put into everything. Explore, read, but don't beat yourself up about it. Don't beat yourself up that you're not building a business or you're not doing something, because I'm one of these people that if I'm not busy, I beat myself up about it. I don't often know what I'm doing with my free time. But I said, explore. And whenever I felt really uncomfortable, I sat there and I just said, it's okay, you're exploring. And that process of repetition meant that actually I fell into a great startup with superpower, where we're changing the way video therapy is delivered to the minority groups, first in London, but hopefully worldwide. We raised a lot of money for it. And then with the new company that I set up about 8 weeks ago, Get Well, which is the first dog mental health platform. This has all come from my ability to slow down, to speed up. And now I'm on this trajectory of speeding up, but it was only because I slowed down and I let myself be comfortable with the uncomfortable.
This is just magic, James. This is a magic conversation that we're having. I think it was Brian Tracy that said it. I listen to lots of people. I do lots of personal development. I think he said it's about going into the silence. So very much the same as you. I just go for a walk or go into the silence. It's those places where it sort of activates the superconscious mind and the ideas start flowing. And you're absolutely 100% right. And I wish I'd learned this many years ago. Slowing down is the key. It's almost like the key to the door. Turn the phone off. Obviously, not when you're listening to one of our podcasts, but after you've listened to the podcast, turn the phone off and spend time either meditating, breathing, stretching, being alone, and allow the mind to just wander. It's such a fabulous, that's magic, James. Absolute magic.
You said it's super conscious. Actually, I would probably say it's super unconscious. And it's when you tap into your unconscious mind, because actually when you daydream, or that is where you are at your most creative, believe it or not. And when you can sit with your unconscious and you can allow yourself to be creative. To be creative, you have to have time. Like my creative period, which is something I've also learned, I was never like this, but is I now wake up at 5:45 every single day, not through an alarm, but because I go to bed early and I get my 8 hours. And I wake up at 5:45 and my other half thinks I'm mad, but this is my way of being creative. 6 o'clock, I'm at my desk and nobody disturbs me until 7:30 when I take the dog out for a walk with her. And that is my hour and a half where I get the most done. I think, I have no phone, I can type, I can write. And that is something which people don't do often, because either they're on the rat race, they wake up and they see they've got kids, and then they go on the commute, they're going to work, and it's just this constant cycle of being busy. But where can you find the time to be creative?
Well, sadly, I think we're going to have to answer that another time, because we are, unfortunately, out of time for now, and I can hear that the dog needs another walk. So, with all that in mind, I think the last thing we need to establish is that, James, if people want to listen to The Rut, where do they go and how can they find you, hear more of you? What do they need to do?
Yeah, well, The Rut is on every major platform. So you can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go on to our website, www.therutpodcast.com. We've got loads of cool episodes with the likes of Alistair Campbell, Fulham's Joe Bryan, Simon Thomas, TV presenter, those kind of people. And then also, if you're interested in dog mental health, go on getwelp.com, where you can have your dog trained through an app.
You can email me at gg@passionateaboutbusiness.co.uk. You can look me up on LinkedIn, Graham Godfrey. You can listen to my radio show on Second City Radio between 7 and 8 a.m. Nobby's Feel Good Radio Show. I recommend it. I get lots of emails and messages after these podcasts, so keep sending them in. James, oh, can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been amazing.
And if for whatever ridiculous reason you want to get in touch with me, you'll find me across social media at Mr. Phil Dave. From Graham Godfrey and me, thank you very much indeed to James Roycroft Davis, and thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe in your podcast application.